Blog Talk Radio.
About any and everything. Well, not anything and not everything, but a lot of it. But that's okay. Anything and everything that's been on the news this week, for the most part, we're going to be talking about it. We've got everything from Tyler Perry to Syria, from twerking to public university policies. Yep, we're talking about it all. And because this show thrives on intense yet invigorating discussion, I invited a few people to help us out. First, we have writer and Black Free Thinkers radio host and co-owner of God is Beauty, All Natural Hair and Body Products, Emmeline Musso.
Hello, everyone. It's so good to be back on your show, Vita. I've been on the show a couple times. Thank you so much for inviting me. And we've always had a very intense, passionate, fun discussion. So it's so great to be back. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you. And we're actually planning a show, so far it's scheduled for the 19th of September, where we're going to be talking about the oppression of the African phenotype. And we'll talk a little bit about that.
we'll talk a little bit on that today, but we didn't agree that topic deserves its own time, right?
Exactly. So we're going to kind of touch on it a little bit. Maybe we'll plug our special episode during that segment. Next, we have another special guest, another panelist. He's a community activist and a music producer. And let me just tell you, he stays schooling people on my Facebook page. Seriously, I appreciate him very much. Doxson, what's up?
What's up, sister? Can you hear me? That's funny.
Thank
you for having me, Vita. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, really. Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure to have you on. And you were on the last show, so thank you for that. I do appreciate it. You did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Again, to be in the presence of you and Emmeline and talking about these issues, you know, right now I'm sitting back chilling. The kids are in bed. I'm lounging. So there's nothing I'd rather be doing right now.
Oh, wow. I appreciate that. Later on in the show, we will be joined by MC Brooks, who, like Emmeline, is also a Black Feet Thinkers radio host. He hosts The Breakbeat, and he also has a show coming up where he's going to be talking about racism and sexism in the otaku community. I'm not familiar with that community, so I'll let him talk about it when he joins us a little bit later. We have so much to talk about, and we don't have that much time. We have like about 2 hours, a little bit less really, if you include some of the music. And by the way, I have some great new music from Grand Unified Theory, my collective that I love. Love you guys. And I got some music from them. We're going to play a little bit of them actually right now. We'll take a quick break, get you guys on the line, get you guys in the chat room, and we're going to start the discussion with our first news topic. I know you guys want to talk about Tyler Perry laying hands on Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Whoa.
And we will.
I'm just going. I'm going to wait.
Dude,
I'm going to wait until after the break.
I cannot wait to hear what other people have to say.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited, too. And so I see some people are already in the queue, and I'm going to get to you guys when we open up that segment. But right now, let's take our quick break and see if we can get some people ready to be on the line, because I know some people are itching to get on, and I want to make sure that, you know, everyone gets that opportunity. So right now, let's listen to Tombstone the Dead Man, 1%.
So apparently, there are two sets of rules for the people in this country. One set for the ultra-wealthy, and the other set for the average citizen. Because the shit they got away with, if we'd have done its equivalent, they'd have locked our asses up. I don't believe the malarkey, speak by the oligarchy. As if you're rich and I'm poor, then it makes it cool to mind me. I also love the way they scream out class warfare. The moment that we know this shit taking way more than your share. These politicians always playing down your influence, thinking that I'm stupid, but truth is I'm seeing right through it. These mobile masters of the universe, the Lord and over resources, leaving the rest of us with no resources. Now, it's why I don't want to hear you talk about a class war, until they see us mad enough to ratchet up a freight jar. Until the savages start ravaging your palaces, and reach you in the street and beat your ass and take your packages. Until that happens, all of this is only conversation. Remember, your station's predicated on the people's patience and their decision to wallow in all the ignorance and pacify themselves with distractions so they don't give a shit. Hey, stupid, you really think they care about you? You think they shed a single tear inside their veil without you? Hey, stupid, I think you're lacking common sense. You're only really here to benefit the 1%. Hey, stupid, that's right, you said that you ignore them. But that don't matter, cause you still be bending over for them. Hey, stupid, you might want an investigation and find out how they are. It's killing you with legislation. The middle class is so violently getting smashed. Body violent politicians bend over to kiss the ass. By their corporate masses, those bastards spend a lot of millions. Sometimes I picture them twirling in mustaches like villains. I'm not feeling the opposite of the sick, demented scenario. Outsourcing occupations disrupt all the cash flow. It's probably a fact that none of y'all are coming back. Financially trapped while the wealthy count all their money stacks. What kind of businessman is money on the campaign? Unless they just invested on some shit they plan to maintain. No need to imagine or go invent conspiracies to make the observations on some shit that we can clearly see. Fuck all that patriotic rhetoric they feed you. Really take a look at the current system that's bleeding you. The people that cheated were classified to big to fail, and all of you got mad, but not one of them fuckers went to jail. Got hey, it. Stupid, you really think they care about you? You think they shed a single tear inside their veil without you? Hey, stupid, I think you're lacking common sense. You're only really here to benefit the 1%. Hey, stupid, that's right, you said that you ignore them. That don't matter, cause you still be bending over for them. Hey, stupid, you might want an investigation and find out how they all are killing you with legislation.
All right, welcome back. You just heard Tombstone the Dead Man, 1%. He said, look at the current system that's bleeding you. I like that, and that's what we need to do. And we're going to talk a little bit about that system in this show. His track is available on his EP, Death Lives. This song that you just heard, 1%, was his take on how the political environment has been looking for the past couple of decades. And y'all can get his albums on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Bandcamp. He gets a hustle on. So make sure that you check him out. He's also part of my Grand Unified Theory Collective. So shout out to him, and shout out to, again, to Grand Unified. So before we even get to the topics, I kind of want to get to some of the rules of the discussion, and we'll probably go over it again as more people get on the line. Before we even get to the discussion, let's make some things clear. Number one, I'm the host. That's something that I think people forget sometimes on the show, And I'm not trying to be rude. I'm not trying to say that I'm the queen of all and, you know, everyone must bow down to me. Nothing like that. But sometimes there's a reason why I'm trying to ring you in. It's not because I'm trying to be rude. It's just that I have to keep a show going. And part of my job is to facilitate the discussion. So I want to make sure I let you guys know that. Also, when you do have your mic opened up and you do get the opportunity to speak, please be succinct. Make your point. I get it. You have a lot to say. We all have a lot to say. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to get everyone's opinions in if they're really long. So if you have a main point, stick to it and be succinct. I think that's fair. Don't you think that's fair, M. Doc? What you guys
think?
Yes,
I think it's very fair.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So, again, if you hear me cutting in on you, it's probably because it's time for us to wrap up your point and get to someone else. Also, no personal attacks. We've never had that problem on this show, and I don't think we will. But just to put that out there, no personal attacks. We're all here to discuss. If you have a point that you disagree with, challenge the idea, challenge the point. Do not attack the person. If you attack the person, I will totally drop you off the show. You're just going to disappear. You're going to wonder why all of a sudden you heard a dial tone. That's why, or whatever your phone does. It's because you attack someone, and I think I have zero tolerance for that. We can have intellectual discourse, but that's where we're going to keep it, right? Okay. And it looks like we have a caller on the line already. Caller 202, you want to tell me your name?
Hey, my name is Curtis.
Hi, Curtis. How are you?
I'm doing
are
well.
You first-
and yourself?
I'm fine. Are you a first-time listener or a first-time caller?
I listened in on one other talk. It was a while ago, though.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome. Welcome back. How about that? Okay.
Thanks.
So are you guys ready? You guys ready for the first topic?
Yes, we are.
And
let me just say this. I'm having a little bit of feedback on my phone. I don't know if my cell phone is cutting up. If I drop,
me
I'll
too.
Call right back, though. But I don't think anything will happen. But I just want to let you know that I'm getting a little bit of lag on the phone.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not getting a lag, but it is cutting off every once in a while for, like, 1 or 2 seconds at a time. So that's maybe it's an engineering issue. But, again, just like Doc said, that's not me leaving the discussion. That's just a technical issue.
Okay. Well, I can hear you guys perfectly. So, Curtis, can you hear me okay? I guess he
Hello?
Cannot. Curtis? Oh, can you hear me okay, Curtis?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm just doing a quick sound check so that way everybody can hear me. So the first topic, like I said, it's about Tyler Perry. And I know we all love Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We love Tyler Perry. Why? Because he does things like this.
Was that were you trying to sound like Madea just there?
I wasn't, but did I?
I don't know. It was very. It was like Southern Vita.
Southern Vita. Sometimes that comes out. Not that I've ever lived in the South, but whatever. This past weekend, Bishop T.D. Jakes brought his MegaFest inspirational event to Dallas, which included various events featuring Oprah Winfrey, Steve Harvey, and Babyface, just to name a few people. And one of the many highlights came from the hands of Tyler Perry. Perry, who attended Sunday morning service at Jake's Potter's House Church, to announce his $1 million donation towards the Influential Spiritual Leaders Developing Youth Center. He took the mic and toward the end of the rousing speech placed his hand on Jake's head and blessed him. Yes, Jesus! He said, I love to give. That's what he said to people who were there. I've been a giver all of my life, and when people have given to you and sown into you and God has touched them and given you favor, see, they don't understand it where I come from. They don't understand it in Hollywood. But I want to tell you something about the blood of Jesus. I have to say it that way. You have to say it that way. So he lays his hand on him. He speaks in tongues. T.D. Jakes does his thing, falls back a little bit, not all the way back, to look like somebody who looked like Kirk Franklin trying to hold him up, because T.D. Jakes isn't exactly a small guy. But anyway, he's leaning back. He's receiving the spirit. What y'all think about that? Mm-hmm. Tell me, what did J. you think? And I'm going to post a link in the chat room for those guys who are listening. And if you're listening and you're not in the chat room, try to refresh your page and try to join the chat room, because I post all the links up from the discussion in the chat room. But, yeah, Emily, what was your reaction when you first saw that video?
Before I even saw the video and I just saw the headline, like not even the full headline, I just saw the first words of Tyler Perry, I'm like, this is going to be some buffoonery. I just know it is, because it usually is where his name is associated. And sadly, I was correct. What bothered me about this situation was the gross hypocrisy of T.D. Jakes feeling that he has been blessed and feigning the catching of the spirit from a man who dresses as a woman for a living but won't even accept his own gay son. And it bothers me because the Bible is also very
clear
about...
Wait, who has a gay
about,
son?
T.D. Jakes does.
Really?
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's wow. How do you get this exclusive information, Em?
You know I know things. No, I'm sorry. That information is very unrelated. And hold on. If I can find the link, I'm going to post it in the chat box
okay.
for you.
But
the Bible
point, which
is very,
you
very
making.
Clear. It's very, very clear about how it feels about men dressing as women and women dressing as men. The Bible is very, very clear about that. The fact that Tyler Perry does it for money doesn't make it less of a sin. It actually makes it more of a sin, since God said to remove yourself from the world and be not a part of the world. But so he was totally cool with letting this dude lay hands on him and pretending to catch a spirit for a donation, but he couldn't accept his own gay child. And I actually did find it here, where a few articles actually where his gay son speaks out and how everybody loves T.D. Jakes except his own son. Like, I'll post a couple of those in the chat box for you guys. But
thank you.
Yeah. So when I saw that, and I see this dude rolling around like a hot mess in that video, I couldn't even make it through the video. I was literally crying with laughter. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen in such a long time. This is actually adults. These are grown men doing this. I couldn't.
Wow. Yeah, I hear you. Doc, what did you think? What was your opinion?
Well, I don't know. I'm likely going to get myself in trouble again. But I looked at it, and I knew, you know, like it's like Emmeline said, I knew that when I saw it, you know, I was expecting theater when I saw the headline. I saw T.D. Jakes. I saw Tyler Perry. And I'm like, all right, you know, they're going to put on a show. This is going to be some silliness. So I kind of expected that going in. But it really got to the theater of the absurd. You know, Tyler Perry starts speaking in tongues, you know, and I'm like, all right, okay, now you guys are over the top with it. Now, come on now, fellas. Now, I expect you to do some of the stuff there. I expected him to go and preach and, yo, I got the spirit and he just gave me $1 million, hallelujah. I expected that. But when he starts speaking in tongues and putting his hand on T.D. Jakes, and T.D. Jakes is being shaking like he got the dark side of the force, it's like, okay, guys, y'all are really, really taking the silly to another level. And what frustrated me is I've seen so many different types of preacher hypes and preacher games and preacher hustles, but I'm like, you know, at some point I expected the people in the crowd to go, all right, now this is too much. Now stop this foolishness, please. And it kind of bothers me that we as brothers and sisters don't call these preachers out and these mega pastors like T.D. Jakes. We don't call them to the carpet for the type of theatrics we see like that, or with Eddie Long being crowned king and just foolishness, almost cuss, with almost foolishness like that. You know, you get tired of that after a while. I understand, and it's an embarrassment to true people of faith. I'm not a man of faith, but I know people of faith. And that to me, that's embarrassing. You know, it just embarrasses the Christian faith.
Well, Curtis, I want you to jump in. What was your reaction? You don't have to have the same reaction as Doxson or M. We both know that there's some heathens. What do you think, Curtis? You still with me, Curtis? Curtis, where you go? I guess he's not here. I guess we lost Curtis. That's okay.
You know, I just wanted to point out one last thing that I think other Christians should keep in mind when they wonder why people think things like speaking in tongues and catching the spirit are ludicrous. Speaking and catching the spirit is one thing, but speaking the tongues, from what I've read of scripture, is not something that one can do on command.
Right.
So it's
go
not
ahead.
Like you can. It's not like you can just have a time, schedule or program for the church service, and pencil in at 9:45. I'm going to start speaking in tongues. It doesn't work that way. Like, you can't just start speaking in tongues and start catching the spirit at will.
I want to go ahead and put my opinion, and then I'm going to get to the caller that's on the line right now. So, as I shared at the last show, we were talking about people who don't take their children to the doctor because they believe God is going to heal their child. And, you guys have some strong opinions about those people, and I kind of was hoping I put a few things in perspective, and I hope to do the same thing with this discussion, too. Don't get me wrong. I thought what I saw was completely ridiculous and completely hilarious. But I do understand certain things. For one thing, that's kind of the culture of that church world. I admitted last time that I was raised in a Christian cult, but I will also admit that I used to speak in tongues. I was a holy roller growing up. I grew up a holy roller, and I can't explain it, but it's a psychological thing, and it's one of the harder parts of coming out of religion for me. It was actually that part of it, trying to reconcile the fact that I believed something so wholeheartedly that my body responded. And
well,
I don't know
like
if you guys
mind
understand
over matter.
That.
I kind of understand what you're saying, because I grew up when I was real small, before I got older and started getting into trouble. My father, rest his soul, love you, Pops, he was a Baptist minister and a pastor at one point. And, you start to believe something so hard that it really almost becomes psychological. You really start to accept it. My problem with the whole speaking in tongues thing is like, I could understand if you were so overwhelmed with emotion that you started speaking another language or something like that. And I understand the story. I don't want to get too far into the biblical story for the sake of time, but I understand where it comes from. But when you're just up there speaking gibberish for the sake of it, and you're looking at Tyler Perry, and you know that man's performing. It's like, come on, bro, now stop this. This is embarrassing to those who are of the Christian faith. I'm not a Christian brother by any stretch of the imagination, but I know Christian people, and I have Christian people in my circle that I respect. And to me, that's just, it's just...
There's
just
another
like
element to it, though.
Is that
the other element is the... Yeah, this is me. This is me.
okay.
The other element to it is that church is a business, right?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
People fail to realize that there is a people have financial and they have psychological and emotional investment in having to believe this, and it's only true because thousands of people in the church think that it's true. You don't want if it was one person who thought so, then you'd feel stupid. But when it's thousands, then you feel intelligent. That
right.
was that church was packed because of the event that day. Tyler Perry is a businessman who makes his money essentially preaching to people in movie form. That's basically what his movies are. They're sermons in movie form. So they got together that day. He gave him $1 million donation. And I can guarantee you the pot and the tithing pool after that performance dwarfed that $1 million that he gave. You have to give people a performance because it justifies what they already believe as individuals. You have to do spectacles like that. You have to talk a certain way in order to give credence to what people are already prone to believe anyway. So people like to take the line, well, they're being manipulated or they're being fooled. People, they know, most Christians know it's ridiculous, but they'll never tell you that in public. It's a kind of an unspoken thing where we all have to pretend like it's not nonsense, even though we know that it is. You know what I'm saying? The only people getting paid off of it are pastors and people like Tyler Perry.
I'm sorry, you guys. I actually want to get another caller on the line. Caller 310, do you want to state your name and where you're from?
This is Frederick from Los Angeles. Hi, Sydney.
Is this my friend?
What's up?
Well, did you want to chime in real quick, Frederick?
Sure. I guess one of the things that was interesting to me about Tyler announcing, you know, what he had donated was, if you look at Matthew 6, if you have your Bibles, it says, so when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by others. So, you know, that's kind of
contrary. When you pray, you must go into your closet and pray privately.
Right, right, exactly. And then I forgot what my second point was going to be. Oh, but what you're saying about the other thing is, you know, on the one hand, I'm not, I don't have
you
a
can't
problem.
Make, you
with
can't
that.
Make money
great
doing
if
that, though.
If he's actually giving money to help to whatever this youth center is going to be. But I think we know that churches have one of the worst records in terms of actually expending the money that they receive for, you know, the charitable purpose. So that's another issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the way I feel about it when I first commented on this, when I first saw this, was my feeling is that catching the spirit and speaking in tongues is a live-action version of the Emperor's New Clothes. In the book, people were afraid of saying that they didn't see anything because they didn't want to be thought of as dumb. And in real life, believers, you know, people who actually have faith in God, don't want to say that they think it's bullshit because then their faith is going to be is going to come into question. And then they see these people rolling on in the aisles of this buffoonery, and they're thinking to themselves, oh, well, he or she probably just has more faith than me if they're still in that cult mindset.
I think,
or otherwise,
I see,
I'm being fooled, but I can't say anything.
Have you been I think what you're saying is 100% on point. That's definitely a part of it. And like I said, I'm speaking from experience. That's part of it because you do want that acceptance, and it's like, you're constantly being told that, look at so-and-so. So-and-so is so spiritual. So-and-so is so whatever. And you want that recognition. So I definitely agree with that. But the other part of it is also just the environment itself. I mean, sometimes I think even without necessarily the recognition, you don't want to be the weirdo. You don't want to be the odd person out. So a lot of – so it's, I don't even think it's always conscious. In fact, I would say a lot of the times that I went through my experience, it wasn't conscious. So, which is probably why
group
you think it's a right. It's like it's you, me personally. I thought at that time that I was being filled with the Holy Spirit. To me, it was not a gimmick. For me, it was serious. For me, I really was connecting with a higher being. That's really sincerely how I felt. It had nothing. I mean, granted, the group thing
about environment.
So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there.
You know what? But to me, though, that is what makes it that much more damaging, and I'm going to use the word damaging in my opinion, to the psyche of not just the people within the black community, but people in general. Because, you know, I got into a really serious discussion with a guy because I said, you know, if you're going to hustle, hustle in church. Don't stand on the street corner with drums in your pocket. Get in the church and hustle. That's where the money's at. That's where your following's going to be. Uncle Sam ain't even going to bother you. Get out there. And he was like, how can you say that? And I'm like, well, because in some ways, this the whole environment of the church, in some ways, when you look at the hustle aspects of it, is more, you know, a preacher is more dangerous than a crack dealer. A crack dealer is not going to sell you a rock and say, here, smoke this rock and you'll be saved. But a preacher will sell faith to you and have you believing something and investing your whole life, your money, your very fiber of your being into this faith. Meanwhile, they're hustling to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. And so it's really dangerous to me when you see guys like T.D. Jakes and Tyler Perry up there shucking and jiving and performing and money changing hands the way it is, because not only is it a misrepresentation of what the true faith is supposed to be like, but it's really dangerous and it takes advantage of people who are really looking to make a connection with the higher power.
Exactly. I mean, I agree.
Agree.
And it said about environment, and the reason I believe that is because I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church, and you better not have been catching anything except the collection plate when it came your way. Catching the spirit, speaking tongues, or any of that buffoonery would not be tolerated. Catholics pray solemnly. You pray. You better be quiet in that church. Anything that you do that is even mildly distracting, then you're the weirdo. If you're the idiot rolling around in the aisles, you had better be having an actual seizure.
Right. I've been to a Catholic church, and that's kind of the environment. Which was being a holy roller, going to a Catholic church was like a big shock, extreme shock. But I want to move on to the next topic because we have so many news topics and so many hot topics we need to get to that I want to make sure that we get opportunities to get as many in as possible. So the next topic I want to talk about is our friend Cheryl Underwood. So Cheryl Underwood made some comments disparaging natural black hair. And during the last episode of The Talk, which is like this knockoff of the View, which is not even as good, and I don't think The View is that great, but whatever, my opinion. So Cheryl Underwood is a host on that show, one of the co-hosts. And she made some remarks regarding natural hair in response to Heidi Klum, who shares that she saves the shorn hair of her biracial children with her ex-husband, Steele. And she described her children's hair as pretty. Underwood asked Klum, "Why would you save Afro hair?" Then she joked, "You can't weave Afro hair. You never see black women at the hair place going, 'Look here, what I need here, I need those curly nappy beads.' That just seems nasty." And so, that was Cheryl Underwood's comment. And, of course, Twitter went crazy and Internet went crazy and Facebook went crazy. I want to know what you guys think about her comments. And some people are defending it, saying, well, she's a comedian. She's just jokes. Why is this an issue? Why do we care? She's just being funny. So I want to get your opinion on that. Let's start off with Doc Finn. What do you think?
I don't like the fact that she tries, you know, you can't hide behind that whole "I'm a comedian" nonsense when you make a comment like that, especially when you look at the fact that there are so many different types of attacks on the black female in this country. The black female has had an attack on her psyche since the moment she stepped foot in this country. From the moment the black woman stepped foot in America, she was told that she wasn't beautiful, that her natural attributes weren't beautiful, her hair was not beautiful, her skin tone was not beautiful, her thick hips were not beautiful, and it is a constant barrage of negativity that is sent in the direction of the black woman on a regular basis. And Cheryl Underwood, you know, first of all, I don't think she's that funny. You know, I mean, to me, she's a walking dick joke, excuse my language, but that's really kind of the level of comedy that she's on. But outside of that, You can't make jokes like that. There are young girls who are having to live through that. I have a daughter now. She wears her hair dreadlock, and she wears her hair naturally. And she gets stares from my daughter's hair is beautiful, but she gets stares from other girls. You know, they're like, "Why you wear your hair like that?" It's because of the fact that we're constantly telling black women that their natural attributes are not beautiful. And you can't get on national television and reinforce that stereotype and then, you know, try to pass it off as jokes. That's bullshit to me. I'm not feeling that.
I hear you.
It's like what Doc said. I don't think that Cheryl Underwood is that funny. I had actually didn't know what her name was for many, many years. It's just recently after following the story that I knew who she was because, admittedly, I've seen her over the years on very, like, low-rent, B-list kind of made-for-TV shows and movies and things. What bothered me was not just this comment, but the comment that she made after Melissa Gilbert said she also saved, Sarah Gilbert said she also saved her children's hair, and she said that, well, your children probably have some beautiful, long, silky
mm-hmm.
stuff. And that was kind of like the nail in the coffin. It might have been able to be redeemed if she had not thrown that comment in there. And what bothered me was Sarah made this comment trying to get the discussion back on topic, and she kind of pulled it back into that Afro-textured hair is ugly mindset. And what bothers me is when people, comedians say these things, racist things, homophobic things, fill in the blank, and they say, oh, well, it's comedy. I know comedy. I know black comedians. When, you know, Paul Mooney, Chris Rock, when he was at the top of his game, even Cat Williams, would say things that could be interpreted in such a fashion, but they said it with as part of a bigger message. The entire comedy stand-up routine had a central theme to it. And Paul Mooney was never afraid to speak on racial matters, particularly him. And
can I
want to
give a little quick
and I think
to that.
I think that you're raising a good point, Em, because I think I kind of know where you're going. There's comedy that touches on social consciousness. You know, some people, Dave Chappelle has done that. You've named Paul Mooney, Chris Rock. What's her name? I can't think of her name. Black comedian, famous. What's her name? Yeah, everybody knows.
Wanda Sykes.
Wanda Sykes.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who have used comedy to push social consciousness. So there is a way to do it. And be funny. When people use that cop out, oh, it's just a joke. Yeah, you can use a joke to tear people down. You can use a joke to uplift people. You can use a joke for various things. So I agree with Doc Sin when he says that's, you know, it's bullshit.
I
want to
give a little pushback,
line.
Though.
Well, just real quick. I'm sorry. Real quick. I have other callers on the line. I just want to say, if you want to get in the queue, I see you're on the line, but if you want to get in the queue, meaning you want to speak, you have to press 1. Otherwise, I would just assume you don't want to speak. Was that Curtis who wanted to jump in?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay,
the pushback I want to give to that is, within the black community, self-depreciating humor of black people is something that is devoured ravenously by the community. Because as we tend to, I don't even know how this occurred over the decades, but there are lots of aspects of negative aspects of just human culture together that we have appropriated. Like, for example, the whole self-depreciating thing about being ghetto and things of that nature. We will enforce negative stereotypes on ourselves and laugh about it maniacally, like black people having bad credit. So, you know, we laugh about things like that, or how we eat bad, or how we show up on time, how black time, how we're notoriously late, and things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be consistent. Now, laughing about our hair, you know, and things of that nature is one, in my opinion, erroneous thing to say, but how
is
that any different than anything else?
Let me push back on that. Because this is the difference between showing up late, this is the difference between even bad credit to some degree, is that we can't change our hair. That's a natural physical feature.
Thank you.
There's nothing we can do about that. Being late to something, that's funny because that's something we can change.
Fixing your credit is something that can actually happen.
Our physical features have been denigrated. And in fact, me and Em, as I said in the beginning of the show, me and Emmalyn have a show we're planning for the 19th where we're going to talk about the oppression of the African phenotype. And this actually fits in that. And in the chat room, someone made a good point that the reality is, and Peace Lynn Monique, thank you for making this point in the chat room, that all jokes contain a twinge of reality. And she said, well, who actually goes to the hair store and asks for hair? I think that's a very valid point. However, let's think about that for a second. Why don't people ask for afro hair? And some people do. I actually have an afro wig that I wear for Halloween and stuff like that. But why is that the case? Why are people not asking for afro hair, at least not here in the U.S.? And we have to also consider the fact that Sheryl Underwood went beyond just saying we don't buy or ask for afro hair. She said it was nasty. She said that Emmalyn, you just brought this up, that Sarah Gilbert brought up her children's hair, and Sheryl said, well, your baby has nice, long, silky hair. That, to me, is
a little... The funny thing is, I don't hear too many white people
left.
Saying that.
Well, here's what I want
to say. It seems like a uniquely black thing to denigrate one's own hair, because in my experience, like, take dreadlocks and cornrows. How other cultures perceive our natural hairstyles is very different than how some people in our culture perceive our own hairstyles. I think that's very interesting and ironic, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's where
I want to get other callers on the line.
I have a couple.
Hello?
I'm sorry. I want to get other callers on the line. Caller 818, do you want to state your name and where you're from? Caller 818, your mic is open.
I'm sorry?
Your mic is open. Is that Tamara?
Oh. Yes, it's me. How are you?
Hi, Tammy.
Hey, sweetie. How are you? Okay.
What do you want to jump in and say?
I have this to say about this situation. It annoys me. probably in it for a different reason, but I will say as far as the comedy goes, if she's making a joke about having, if I'm a comedian and I make jokes about being dark skinned, I'm so dark when I get out of the car, the oil light comes on. That's funny. But if I'm bleaching my skin every day, that shows that I'm not really laughing with myself. I'm laughing at myself. And the fact that she conceals her hair in such a way and makes sure that she's, I mean, she was humiliated to take her wig off that day. If I had on a wig, I could take it off and swing my fro. I wouldn't even care. She goes through great lengths to conceal her naps. So her joke wasn't a joke. It was her reality that she thought everybody would agree with and was shocked when not everyone did.
Wow. Good point. I have another caller on the line, caller 313. Do you want to state, let's figure out who you are first. State your name.
My name is Akia.
Hi,
hello,
Akia.
Hello, Akia.
Hi,
Welcome
Vita.
To the show.
Okay. I just tweeted.
Hold on. Which Akia
way,
am I speaking
so.
With?
Akia White.
Okay,
y'all
awesome.
Awesome, Akia.
Okay,
do you want to go ahead and jump in?
Yeah, I'm kind of piggybacking off what Tamara just said and kind of what Curtis said. I have a problem with her comments on the show because I feel like she was making fun of us because of her low self-esteem issues, and that's what I have a problem with. I also have a problem with the fact that she kind of disrespected Heidi Klum's children, you know, by calling their hair nasty.
That's a good point.
You know, just to repeat how Sarah Gilbert was trying to clean it up because, you know, it kind of seemed like she was even offended. And she's not, you know, she's not experienced in this, but even for her to, you know, kind of be like, well, I cut my kids' hair too, you know, I don't understand it and I don't accept her apology or anything. She has issues that she has to work out, and I don't think that we all should pay for what she's going through.
And thank you for bringing up the apology. She actually, I wanted to read this real quick, and we're going to have to move on to the next topic soon. But she said, I'm not what you think I am in response to all the Twitter stuff she was getting. I'm not what you think I am. I don't have self-hate. I am not ashamed of my blackness or who I am. In high school, I had a giant afro. In college, I loved my afro puff. My dad instilled black pride in me. I have no hair shame whatsoever. She also talked about the struggles she's faced in the entertainment industry as a plus-size black woman. Quote, you have no idea what I and others in the business have been through. I often feel uncomfortable. For years, I've had to face, I'm not black, I'm too black, I'm too fat, I'm not fat. Someone who looks like me, who works in the business I work in, it's difficult. Everybody talks about the way I look, and it's our people that have been the hardest on me. I thought that was dope, but I didn't really buy her apology.
Okay,
but
you know what? I'm so sick of the it's our people, because usually when I hear people say that, it's from people who live around a bunch of black people. I live in a city that is 0.24% white. When I was in Miami, every black person and Hispanic person I saw praised my hair. No one avoided eye contact with me when I wore my hair out like they do here. I didn't catch anyone laughing on the side and pointing at my hair like they do here. Yes, no, white people are not better. You're just around them less. When you're around them more and they know that they can act out because you're the only one, they show their true colors. And black people love my hair. I've never had one negative comment from a black person about my hair. I just
you know what's funny?
It.
I have a similar experience like that. Like I haven't heard too many negative comments from black people, but that could also be because people know me, probably know better. Caller 404, you're on the line. Your mic is open.
Hey, just a quick minute while I'm sitting here waiting for this trailer to get ready.
What's your name?
This is Mario. Mario.
It's Mario.
Oh. Hey, Mario.
Normally I'm hanging with him over there. But I got several points that I want to make right quick. One, with regards to what she said, having watched Def Comedy Jam and Comic View and for when it was on HBO and seeing all the black comics come up there and everything, I think it was just a stupid joke that just didn't get any traction and actually worked against her more than anything. I think she didn't think about it when she said it. I don't think that every time you make a funny quip about something related to black people, that you automatically denigrating everything that is black. You know, you have the right to crack a joke. I love an inappropriate joke. You tell me an inappropriate joke racially or whatever like that, I can giggle about it all day within the proper context. I don't think the joke was funny. I don't think it made sense. I think it was stupid. But I don't always think that every time you say something negative about black people, you're talking about denigrating an entire sex or an entire history or an entire subset and everything like that. In fact, I almost believe that sometimes we kind of look at things in a way it's like this has to be a bigger issue. And sometimes I think it's just stupid. It's just that simple.
Okay,
stupid.
Well, let me piggyback off that, what you said, and go to the next story about the Tulsa, Oklahoma school, a black school, okay? We're talking about a black school. They sent a girl home, a seven-year-old. In fact, let me just go ahead and pull up the story.
Yeah, I know
so that way.
About. Yeah, I thought that was pretty jacked up. As a matter of fact, in regards
well,
to
let
that,
me,
you
I,
know,
let me get to the story,
right.
Actually. Let me do the story, right. And then I'll get right back to you.
Okay,
Deborah Bound Community School is one student short for the remainder of the school year. Terrence Parker, and this is from Fox23.com, if you guys are wondering where I'm getting this from. Terrence Parker said the school hassled him and didn't leave him a choice. Parker said he yanked his seven-year-old daughter, Tiana, out of class because of a disagreement that left her in tears. Parker,
right.
Who's a barber, said school officials at Deborah Brown told him Tiana's hair didn't look presentable. She's always, according to him, she's always presentable and that he takes pride in his kids looking nice. The charter school has its own set of rules. While no one at the school agreed to speak with any of the news on camera, an administrator named Millard Jones told Fox 23 that Terrence Parker was fully aware what was expected. However, for his young daughter, it just hurts. And this is what she said. The little girl said, they didn't like my dress. So the school has a dress code, and it states that hairstyles such as dreadlocks, afros, mohawks, and other faddish styles are unacceptable. The school feels that could distract from the respectful and serious atmosphere it strives for. Now let's go back to what you were just saying. You know, I have a hard time just giving people passes because of the comedic aspect. Even if they did it in 1993, when Jeff's Comedy Jam was big, you know, I feel like at a certain point we have to raise our social consciousness. That's been 20 years. That was 20 years ago. We have, I would like to think, have advanced past a lot of those things that we did and talked about in the 90s. So I personally don't think. Oh, I'm sorry. You wanted to jump in?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't cut anyone off, did I? I'm sorry. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know when something's wrong. Like when I listen to Eddie Murphy's Delirious, and he's using the F word, referring to homosexuals the whole time. At the time that I laughed at it, I didn't know the context of it. Now I do. So now I'm a bit offended by it. I get what's going on here. I thought that whole school thing was some BS. I'm just saying I don't think Cheryl Underwood even thought about it when she said it. And in hindsight being 2020, then you being a celebrity on top of that and all this going out nationally, now you're getting bit back and behind because now it's a different time. You can't really say that stuff. But I don't think it was – I just don't – as a matter of fact, growing up when I grew up in my area and whatnot, it had a lot of black community and stuff like that, I heard a lot of things about black girls in their hair. That world, there's some viciousness, especially in one case, I know girls that got into really big fights and stuff, and this girl actually took time to cut off this girl's hair because her hair was long and straight, hers wasn't. And that was the main thing. I can't say what each person should do in different areas and stuff like that. All I know is, in this case right here, I think it was just stupid. And something shouldn't have been said, but I don't think.
Well, Mario, may I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Do you think that Cheryl Underwood feels that way? Do you think does, in fact, think that afro hair is nasty, and maybe that's why she conceals it? And, I mean, out of curiosity,
I know plenty of people who wear wigs and whatnot for whatever reason they do and everything. As far as her, I think she might actually feel that way on some level. But on top of that, though, I just think the joke was stupid.
And I agree that she was joking. I think she believed that the joke was something that we could go, yeah, that's true. But when people didn't say, yeah, that's true, then she was caught in the crosshairs. But the bottom line is she did feel this way, and she thought everybody would go, uh-huh, that's right. But there, sometimes a joke goes too far because...
Okay.
I'm sorry. I felt like I lost you.
I would argue her timing was bad.
I don't think she was joking.
No, she wasn't joking.
I
don't think she was joking. I think she was speechlessly. I think jokes was the excuse. It was a joke. Was the excuse she made after the negative, the negativity started coming her way. Well, I'm just joking. I don't think she was joking. I think she was what she felt.
Well, you could tell
I think
the tone
she was
by the tone of her
like,
voice
she was telling
that
joke
it wasn't really a joke.
But her timing was bad. We're in the middle of a kind of a cultural revolution thing where black women are kind of reclaiming those hairstyles, and then white people are taking notice, especially I read the Nielsen annual report on the financial state of the black community for marketing purposes. And one of the things in there is that having more authentically looking black people and marketing to them in terms of following the natural hair move, things of that nature is one of the major points they were making. So I can't stress the point that as far as hair and appearance is concerned, we've kind of internalized some negative things from our past history that white people apparently have moved on from and even have learned to embrace certain aspects of our culture that we loathe. And it's a weird thing.
I don't know if I'm
convinced certain
of
things
that
they would embrace, we look at it like, oh, that's nasty. Where Heidi Klum was looking at this woman, I mean, the love of my life was a black man. I love my children. I think they're beautiful. And here's another black woman telling me that my kid's hair is ugly. What? That would be unheard of at any other point in time in history.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I also think there's a certain level of fetishizing that happens in the white community with black features. I don't know if that is something positive necessarily. But I do want to move on
but
to
But I just
topic.
Think it's different. It's the attractiveness of something different.
You
know what I'm saying?
I hear you. I got to move on
when
to the next
75%
topic.
When you're 75%
of the population,
really short on time, you know.
We are really short on time, and I have to go to the next topic. I appreciate you for chiming in on that one. But let's get to the N-word. So, Bert, I'm going to post this link in the chat room for those of you guys who may not be familiar with this topic. The N-word was put on trial recently. I don't know if anybody even heard that because I didn't hear too much buzz about it. But a federal jury in New York has rejected the argument that use of the N-word amongst blacks can be a culturally acceptable term of love and endearment, deciding its use in the workplace is hostile and discriminatory no matter what. Jurors last week awarded $250,000 in in compensation and damages to Black Employment Agency worker who was the target of an N-word laced rant by her black boss, and they returned to a Manhattan federal court Tuesday to decide on punitive damages, and I believe that's going to happen next week. The case against Rob Carmona and the employment agency he founded, Strive East Harlem, gave legal airing to what some see as a complex double standard surrounding the word. It's a degrading slur when uttered by whites, but can be used at times with impunity among blacks. But 38-year-old Brandy Johnson told jurors that being black didn't make it any less hurtful to be the target of what her attorney called Carmona's quote, four-minute nigga tirade about inappropriate workplace attire and unprofessional behavior. Johnson, who taped the March 2012 remarks after her complaints about his verbal abuse were disregarded, says she fled to the restroom and cried for 45 minutes.
I want to know which did he call her. Did he call her a nigger or did he call her nigga? That's to me, and I hate when people say it's the same word because when they say that, that implies that black people are too ignorant to pronounce ER. It's not literally the same word because we're smart enough to know how to spell and pronounce ER. But if he's calling her a nigger, basically you are degrading me, and no, I don't like that. The idea that black people cannot – show bigotry towards each other. Like, a black cop racially profiles a black kid. That's racial profiling. I don't care what how black he is. You know, I think it depends on the context. If he's calling her a nigger, basically, especially an older black man, which that means a downgraded, disgusting, trashy black person, then yes, she has every right to be upset about that.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't care if you use an ER or an A. If somebody's going off on me and cussing me out at work in the first place, that's a problem.
That's true.
Period.
That's the key word, at work.
At that point. Yeah, this is at work, I don't think the ER or the A even matter. If I'm at work, those are not terms that we should be using at work anyway.
I totally agree, but I don't think one is racially motivated. But I do agree, it's inappropriate. But one may not feel, I may not feel like someone used something, a racial slur against me, is what I meant. But go on, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I had another caller. I believe 239 was on the line. Caller 239, did you want to jump in? Maybe not. Okay, never mind. I'm closing your mic again. If you want to get back on the queue, you have to press 1, everyone. Go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
I think it was N. About that. Yeah. Now, the people on the line who do know me know that I'm Haitian, and that is a majority black country. So my experience... and it wasn't very long. I was in the country when I was 6, was even among Haitians now, it's usually only the ones that are raised here that use any type of, any variation of the N-word, whether it be nigger or nigga. It's usually only the Haitians who are raised here, and it's very, very few of even them that do it, or black Americans. Well, of course, you know, racist white Americans. And my issue with the word has always been that... I don't find it offensive when really anybody says it, and it's because I've never had a white person say it to me. I've never had a black person say it to me, but I've heard it used jokingly among black people or as a term of endearment. However, whether or not I find it offensive is beside the point. I feel that such slang terms should not be in the workplace regardless. You wouldn't call someone... cracker or honky, as even if you were calling them that as a term of endearment, like you were cool like that, why would you call them that at work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why?
No,
does
I agree.
In the workplace, why does this belong in the workplace at all? There's just some lines that shouldn't be crossed. You cannot have every relationship with every person, and you cannot have bring every conversation into any scenario.
You're right.
Understand.
But I do feel compelled to call you the N-word since you've never been called one.
Yeah, I was raised in South Florida.
Lord.
Tammy's my first, you guys.
Tam, you are so fired.
But yeah, living in South Florida, I've been just with so many different ethnicities. It's never happened.
You're in Florida. That's surprising. But Doxson, did you want to jump in?
Oh, no, I just wanted, you know, just to piggyback on what Em said, you know, the key words for me are at work. That is the key. That's the key word for me. Now, if we were outside of work, this would be a totally different conversation. We're in the street or whatever, but at work, you have to maintain a certain decorum in the workplace in order to get anything done. And I think that once you start allowing people to speak a certain way and say certain things, the slope becomes very slippery, and sooner rather than later, somebody's going to be offended by how you address them, whether you're being using it as a term of endearment or whatever. For me, the key words here are at work. Outside of work, this is a different conversation for me, and I have a different feeling. In the workplace, you can't do it. You're at work. Do your job. Carry yourself a certain way, and then go home.
Okay, now I'm a little bit lost. I thought the reason for the lawsuit was she was saying this was a racial thing. Was or is, I don't know. I've been drinking wine. Go ahead.
Tammy, stop calling when you're tipsy.
Oh, but it's 10 o'clock at night, sweetness.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
it's wine time.
Well, I want to move on to the next topic because, again, like I said, we have a lot. So if we don't get to delve too deep into all of them, I'm sorry, everyone. You can hit me up on Facebook and talk to me as much as you want. I have no problem with that. I posted the link to the next topic in the chat room already. And this is time. It's about Dunkin' Donuts. Don't we all love – first of all, I hate Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, my God.
Let me just put that out there. I think some of the most driest, nastiest donuts ever. And I'm very glad we don't have them in L.A. At least I haven't seen one. Anyway, so this happened in Bangkok. A leading human rights group has called on Dunkin' Donuts. Am I hearing music in the background?
I was about to say, that's not me, y'all.
It's not me either. It's not me either.
If you have music in the background, please turn off, mute your phone or whatever you have to do.
It's not good music at all. It's not good.
Please be respectful of this show. If you have, if you're in a space where you have music playing or you're in a loud space, please, you know, either remove yourself from that space or mute your phone. You guys still with me?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't do that though. That wasn't me.
Okay. So in Bangkok, a leading human rights group has called on Dunkin' Donuts to withdraw a bizarre and racist advertisement for chocolate donuts in Thailand that shows a smiling woman with bright pink lips and blackface makeup. The Dunkin' Donuts franchise in Thailand launched a campaign earlier this month for its new, quote, charcoal donut, featuring the image, which is reminiscent of 19th and early 20th century American stereotypes for black people that are now considered offensive symbols of a racist era. In posters and TV commercials, the campaign shows the woman with a shiny jet black 1950s-style beehive hairdo holding a bitten black donut alongside the slogan, quote, break every rule of deliciousness. Human Rights Watch said it was shocked to see an American brand name running an advertising campaign that would draw howls of outrage if released in the United States. Quote, it's both bizarre and racist that Dunkin' Donuts thinks that it must color a woman's skin black and accentuate her lips with bright pink lipstick to sell a chocolate donut, said Phil Robertson, the Deputy Asia Director for Human Rights Watch. He also continues to say Dunkin' Donuts should immediately withdraw this ad, publicly apologize to those it has offended, and ensure that this never happens again. The campaign has ruffled many in Thailand, where it's common for advertisements to inexplicably use racial stereotypes. A Thai brand of household mops and dustpans called, quote, Black Man, uses a logo with a smiling black man in a tuxedo and bow tie. One Thai skin whitening cream runs TV commercials that say white-skinned people have better job prospects than those with dark skin. An herbal Thai toothpaste says its dark-colored product is black, but it's good. The CEO for Dunkin' Donuts in Thailand dismissed the criticism as, quote, paranoid American thinking. And he says this, it's absolutely ridiculous, says CEO Nadeem Salhani. We're not allowed to use black to promote our donuts? I don't get it. What's the big fuss? What?
Wait, hold on, don't interrupt me, guys.
Let me finish the story. I know y'all excited. Let me finish the quote. Can I get the quote out, people? Okay. He said, what if the product was white and I painted someone white? Would that be racist? Sahani said that the Thai franchise of Dunkin' Donuts operates independently of the American operation and that donut sales have increased about 50% since the campaign was launched about 2 weeks ago, which he attributed to curiosity about the new advertisements. He continues to say, not everybody in the world is paranoid about racism, said Sahani, a Lebanese. He's Lebanese. He lives in Thailand, and he said his teenage daughter was the model featured in the campaign. And he says, "quote I'm sorry, but this is a marketing campaign, and it's working very well for us." Well, now go ahead and let loose.
I hate to be the person, but I don't see the racism in this commercial. I don't. I've looked at it 100 times, and I've said, come on, it's in there somewhere, and I don't get it. It's a girl. She's not painted the color of a black person. Her lips are the color they would be if she wasn't dark chocolate. I don't see it. I don't even see the association between the girl and a black person. I don't. I mean, if I don't get it. I don't get it.
You know, I'd buy that. I'd buy that if it weren't for the pink lips. Like, seriously, I'd totally be with you. But the pink lips.
But the pink lips. But they never did the pink lips. They did the white lips. They did the red lips. The pink lips. I know. I don't get. I don't get the connection between the pink lips.
Yeah, it's not the connection with black people. It's the connection with the caricature of black people that have been made throughout several, you know, throughout history.
I don't see it.
You know, I think that it's interesting that I could. I would buy. Like I said, I would agree with you if I felt. If I didn't see the pink and red lips, then I probably agree. I
if the girl was made to look unattractive after the fact, then I would get it. But why would they go out of their way to make her look hot? If it was supposed to be, she turned into a Negro.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this issue as well.
I don't think that was the message that she turned into a Negro. I didn't see that as the message.
I'm torn on this subject because on one hand, I know how incredibly colorist a lot of Asian countries are. I've seen a lot of the skin bleaching ads that they run in countries like India, Malaysia, Thailand. Actually, I'll link one of the ads that was posted in a YouTube video about for one company called Fair and Lovely, which is actually owned by Unilever, the same company that makes Dove. So and I've seen actually very racist you know, the black herbal toothpaste where you have this black guy calling like the gorilla from King Kong.
I've seen that.
I've seen the Fair and Lovely ads where they imply that you will get a better job, you will get someone to love you if only you are whiter. But then I look at this ad and the woman looks beautiful. She looks stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like she is drenched in this darkest, richest chocolate. And I really think that it is for the sake of advertising food. Because no matter how most of the world feels about the European standard of beauty being the standard of beauty, at the end of the day, nobody wants to eat white-colored food. You're not going to have the Greek yogurt if you could have the dark chocolate cake. And there's some donuts here.
I hate dark chocolate cake. I fucking hate chocolate cake.
What the hell?
Yeah, I know. It's a whole other topic for another day. I think that shit's nasty. And chocolate ice cream. I hear you, though. I have another caller,
offended.
Though. I want to get them in. I have another. Girl, calm down. I have another caller. Caller 929. What's your name and where are you calling from? Your mic
Christina is
open. Is
B.
Christina?
Hello?
Yes. You said your name is Christina? Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Hello.
Yes, your mic is open.
Oh, okay. I was just looking. It's B. I saw the advertisement on Facebook for your blog talk.
Okay.
And I was looking at the campaign. I don't think it was meant to be racist or meant to be blackface or disrespectful to black people. I think sometimes we just turn things into something much bigger than what it really is.
Mhm. What was your name again?
B.
B. Okay.
B. Wrong.
Make sure I got it right. Got it.
The
oh,
way
B.
I feel about
yeah.
it is, I would be offended if she looked like Aunt Jemima or something.
Exactly.
Why
Aunt Jemima? Why is she offensive? There's nothing wrong with Aunt Jemima. I mean,
no. It's not. I don't think there's anything
it's
wrong
the cultural
Jemima,
impact that Aunt Jemima
what,
had.
We all know what Aunt Jemima
offensive.
Represents. She represents that era where every black woman was big, jolly, and lived to make you food and be your mammy.
Okay, Aunt Jemima type. I get it. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's talking about
when I have this woman looking
Curtis,
as,
wanna,
as luscious
I'm
as a
sorry.
Donut.
Curtis, you want to jump in on this? Curtis, I saw that you pressed one. You want to jump in or no?
Yeah. The one thing that I wanted to keep in mind to kind of frame it is that with global marketing, people with companies, people like to think that there's a centralized marketing department. But I used to do RFPs for different marketing companies. And for each region, it's a different marketing company. So the McDonald's commercials that you get in Japan are worlds different from the ones you get here. Same thing in Toyota. Toyota is based in Japan, but their commercials in Japan are even the names of the cars, the entire marketing portfolio is different for each region. So while they would never pull a commercial here, they would never do something like that in the United States. While it would be okay there, it wouldn't get the same response.
That was actually a point that was made in the article when I read it, was that it's a different company, basically. It's the same company, but it's a different group of people who run it, and which is what the article stated. You know, do I think that this was intentionally meant to be racist towards black people? No, I don't think it was intentional. Do I think there's a culture, and it's explained it in the article as well, that there's some type of culture of racial offensiveness against black people in their advertising that takes place? Yes. And I think this is teetering that line. The pink lips, like I said, the red and pink lips, that's the part that makes me cringe. Everything else, I could have gotten past. I didn't get the
I'm gonna post a link for you guys. I think everybody should see it. I'm sure everybody saw the report that the African American community at $1.2 trillion in spending power by 2020. They do a report every year about black consumerism, black spending habits, things of that nature. When you see the numbers about the large amount of marketing that I'm sure you've seen when you look at the TV, being racist is almost a death sentence to your quarterly profits and your stock numbers, especially nowadays, because we're the fastest-growing group with spending power. We'd be the 12th largest company by GDP and purchase power parity if we were a country unto ourselves. So my thing is, if something was really, really racist, which I would find unlikely, company, because they're driven by profit. They like anybody who buys something from them. It don't even matter about race or things of that nature. If it was really racist, we wouldn't have to speculate. We wouldn't even have a conversation to be obvious. And it would be an obvious blunder, and it would be somebody getting paid, because that's the last thing they want to do.
So
We have one last topic for this segment, and then we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back to our next segment. So I just posted a link in the chat room about Ghetto Tracker, and I don't know if anyone's heard of it.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, I posted it in the chat room. So a new app tactfully titled Ghetto Tracker, a service seeking to help people identify safe areas in unfamiliar cities, has already garnered enough backlash to prompt an immediate name change to, quote, good part of town. However, the PR move may not do much to alter the public's reception of the app, which critics are slamming as a racist, classist app for helping the rich to avoid the poor. The app functions by allowing locals to rate the safety of different parts of a given area. According to The Week, the original launch of the page featured a white family of four smiling alongside the app's promise to show users, quote, which parts of town are safe and which ones are ghetto or unsafe, unquote. In addition to the name change, all mention of the word ghetto has been removed from the site. The site now features an ethnically diverse family on its homepage. In an email sent to Gawker, the app's team said it changed the name in response to emails from a woman whose family had been contained in an actual World War II ghetto and one from a man who grew up in a struggling area and went on to graduate from college and overcome his upbringing. I can't be held responsible for the assumptions people may make in regards to factors like race and income, quote. The letter to Gawker continued. I've seen comments on blogs and in Twitter that are trying to say this is encouraging racism or social stratification, and that was never our intention. But critics have pointed out the app's adverse effects on the community regardless of the app's intentions. It's pretty detrimental to society, quote, by the way, this is a quote, it's pretty detrimental to society when we reinforce the idea that poor or crime-heavy areas are places to be categorically avoided or shamed, unquote. David Holmes wrote that on Pando Daily. I don't know what Pando Daily is, but that's what he wrote. He also continues to say, as if to assume that every person who lives in an area with comparatively high crime or poverty is a criminal, or that these areas are devoid of culture or positivity. I believe I posted that link in the chat room for those of you guys who would like to see the article for yourself. If I haven't posted it, I'll post it again. Okay. I have a caller with the screwy number on the line. I want to get new callers in first. I'm really sorry. I'll get right back to you. Caller with 111111. 111 111.
That's not a screwy number. That's just a lot of ones. Good evening. It's Brown
mm-hmm.
Beasley. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Brown Beasley?
Yes, the Brown Beasley.
Oh, okay.
I'm calling in. I'm a little late. I'm kind of shocked that someone wouldn't think that the image of a mammy character, Aunt Jemima, as not being racist. There's been
That I don't think that claim was made. Actually, the opposite was made about the Aunt Jemima image or the mammy image.
Oh, maybe I misheard. But no, I think, as most of us here should be aware, there's been a history of using, stereotypical, subservient.
Oh yeah, and I did
even ignorant. I just looked them up on the net. There's one of the guy on the cream of wheat box, where the guy's speaking in broken English and holding a sign up. You know, it's thing. As far as the, let me move on then, since I was wrong there. I didn't hear what I thought someone said. I didn't think that was racist. I don't have a big problem with this app.
Brown. Just so you know,
I wouldn't mind
Brown
having the app on my phone.
It
says ghetto tracker, I mean, the first ghettos were in Poland, where the Jews were cordoned off. That doesn't have too much to do with black folks.
Right.
So you're telling me that ghetto tracker is...
It doesn't bother me at all.
It's
application.
Is it helping you to avoid concentration camps? Let's be real.
I'm just saying that the origin of the term ghetto, and you laugh about avoiding concentration camps. There's a lot of things happening in America. They may be coming a little bit sooner than what you think.
I think that app could be good because what it's doing is keeping the hand that's destroying the ghetto away from it. So while these people are going away,
hello?
The people in the area can take care of themselves without people trying to intrude. So in a way, when it's trying to be evil, the positiveness is still lingering in it. So I feel, let them go away from here. We don't want them in the area. We don't want them to start businesses because, like my man said, we're growing in the market share. So why do we want other people?
Why do you keep saying we as if black people are a monolith?
Right.
I would like to say something as a person.
I refuse to live in the hood.
Well, the hood is where everything starts from. Let's talk about hip hop and where it
Pam
starts
was
from.
Speaking. I hear you.
I'm sorry.
Pam, but
I'm
Pam
sorry.
Wanted to
no, no,
jump
oh,
in.
No, that,
yeah.
wasn't, that wasn't me.
Yeah,
that's Tamara. We sound alike. Okay.
As a
person who I didn't grow up in the hood. I didn't grow up in the ghetto. But I was raised by a woman who absolutely vilified people who lived in the ghetto,
right.
Vilified the hood. I was taught that it was a horrible and scary place to be, and that's how I was raised. So
right.
I
cross the other side of the track.
I brought home my ex-husband, and he was from South Central, and my mother she almost Woo-hoo! Hit the floor. She almost hit the floor. She was like, he's not like us. And, you know, she really wanted to put that separation there. And as a person who just recently, and I know I told you this, Vita, that I've decided the word ghetto is not going to be used to describe something shabby in my mind anymore. Because at some point you have to grow up and grow on and say, you know what, my mother's crazy and I'm not going to keep that going in my family's life. And for that I say, this ghetto tracker, because of the way I was raised and the people I was raised around, is specifically to keep you away from people who are shabby and poor and disgusting because they can't be trusted. They can't be trusted. They want to do bad things to you, and they hate you. They hate you because
I'm assuming you're from Los Angeles.
They're not going to sit there thinking, I'm trying to avoid
The line keeps breaking up. Are you from Los Angeles? You mentioned South Central.
I'm sorry.
Hello?
I had to mute almost everybody because everybody cannot talk at the same time as much as I'm sure we all want to. But I believe, Brown Beasley, you were saying something.
I don't live in Los Angeles. I used to for one period of time. I'm originally from Louisiana.
Where did your folks live? Up the hill from South Central? what, my, New Park?
We lived in West Hollywood. We lived in West Hollywood. We lived in Hollywood Hills, like near the Beverly Center. We used to live in Hollywood Hills. When I grew up, I moved to the Valley, and then I moved to Santa Monica. But that's neither here nor there. My mother was wrong. My mother was raised in a small town in Natchez, Mississippi, and moved out and said, "I'm going to be better than them," and taught us that we were different than them. And that's all a lie, because when people stereotype us, they stereotype
Your mother's Creole.
Well, no,
my mother's not Creole, or just light skinned.
A light-skinned it is?
I'm from Los Angeles. I'm relating to what you're saying. I'm relating to what you're saying.
No, you're trying to attribute a certain type of whiteness to this behavior.
No, I'm not. You know what?
Behavior.
Let me stop. I'm trying to understand.
I was really trying to say.
I thought that maybe you guys lived up in View Park or Winter Hills or that
no,
area,
we,
and,
we,
which,
no,
is,
we're,
which is probably we're, which is probably 2 miles away from South Central.
No,
that's not worth it. Let me put this out there, Pam. I'm okay with, you know, if you're challenging a point or whatever, you're asking certain questions. But I'm not saying you cross the line, Brown, because I think you're okay. But I just want us to be cautious and be careful when we start trying to make things personal and to make a point. I mean, I get that she brought up her own experience.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
Can I make a point?
I grew up in Windsor Hills, and I hung out in South Central, and my mother said the exact same thing.
I was not saying that you can identify with her.
People are forgetting a major point.
Can I make a point?
No, wait a minute. I'm sorry, guys. Let me just make sure that I clarify something for Brown Beasley. I wasn't saying that you crossed the line. I just wanted to make sure I put that out there, so anybody else who jumps in, I don't want them to cross the line. You understand? It wasn't me reprimanding or anything like that.
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm
so
fine.
I wanted to make sure that's clear. But go ahead. I believe Doc Finn was going to say something.
Yes. I am from the hood. I grew up in the hood. I grew up in Trenton, New Jersey. And you can't get much more hood than that. And this ghetto tracker is pretty much, I forgot her name just now, God darn it. But she's pretty much on point. What this ghetto tracker is basically avoid these streets so you won't get robbed. Avoid these streets so you don't get jacked. So avoid these people, avoid these neighborhoods, because you don't want to be dealing with those people. That's really the attitude. It's really kind of classist, kind of caste system BS that's put off as a, here's where, you know, it's put out there as it's innocent enough, but in reality it's just basically, you know, here's the streets to stay off of so you ain't got to deal with a bunch of ghetto people, which is how it got the title Ghetto Tracker in the first place.
Why is that necessarily a bad thing, though? I don't get that point.
It's a bad thing because not everybody from the ghetto is bad. But that's not what I'm saying.
Hold on, let me finish what I was saying. Let me get to what I was saying. No one is making the case, that's actually a red herring, that everyone that's in the hood is ghetto. That's not the point that's being made. You don't care about the exception to a rule. You care about what you are likely to encounter. And let's face it, when people are making decisions about what houses they're going to live in, they're thinking about safety, because no one's going to spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 to hope under a certain level of certainty that your kids are going to be safe, that your housing prices are going to be sustainable, and that you're going to good schools. Let's be real. Like when you, it's a class thing, because it is what it is. People are going to buy the most expensive accommodations that they can afford with their money. It just is what it is. You see what I'm saying? So to try to make it seem like these people are bad when you are upper middle class or wealthy, that you make it a deliberate attempt to avoid living in shoddy neighborhoods because you're making essentially a political decision rather than an economic one, I think is misguided. No one's going to volunteer to live there and you making that kind of money.
I have another caller on the line, but I want to get M's opinion in, and then I'm going to go to the next caller. So, M, go ahead.
Okay. This is the way that I feel about the ghetto tracker, and I'm going to agree with Doxin here, that I feel that it is merely encouraging economic and racial separatism.
Absolutely.
My feeling on this is that there's nothing wrong. And let me finish here. There's nothing wrong with wanting to remain in a safe area. There's nothing wrong with even wanting to remain in a wealthy area. My issue is with an app that calls itself the Ghetto Tracker, whose sole purpose is for you to avoid those areas. Because let's be honest here, anyone over the age of 15 who's been taught any street smarts knows exactly where the bad neighborhoods are. They know exactly where not to go or where they need to leave before the sun sets. You don't need an app for that. The app's purpose is to promote this classism. It's like giving a member of the KKK a nigger avoidance app. They know what this person looks like. They don't need a nigger
like
avoidance
that app. Like that. That
people look like.
I'm going to hang on to that one.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, M, for that. I want to go ahead and get to our next caller. Caller 773.
Oh, no, just go ahead. I'm here.
Oh, you pressed one.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just leave me in the background.
Okay. All right. So I do want to take a quick break. Thank you, everyone, for chiming in on the first segment of the show. We have.
Can I apologize to the lady that brought the boy home from South Central and her mother didn't like it? My mother told me the same thing when I brought the girl home from South Central. I can relate to you. That's all. That's really where I'm coming from. I'm not speaking from any other position than that.
Okay. And like I said before, we appreciate you, and I do appreciate you for calling. And
no,
I'm not.
Everybody, no one likes to get their intentions misinterpreted, particularly me. I don't mess with them hood rats no more.
For clarifying it.
I left them hood rats alone 20 years ago.
Thank you.
Right, good.
Thank you. I appreciate you for clarifying that, and I'm sure Tammy appreciates it too. But we're going to take a break because you guys are all heated, and I need to get some water. So I'm going to go ahead.
I need more wine.
You always need more wine, Tam. And you know what's funny? I knew that was Tam.
You know what, Tammy? I'm going to give you some boxed wine from my neighborhood drive-thru liquor store. How about that?
Oh. Oh. He bought that life. That's all. So we'll take a quick break. Let's listen to some. We're going to listen to Adequate, who's also a part of Grand Unified Theory, my family. Shout out to them again. And this is Think Before You Speak. So this is for all of my humanists, atheists, free thinking folk out there, all right? Here we go.
Deoxyribonucleic acid, for example. Sounds impressive, right? Have you ever seen what happens when you put something in acid? It dissolves. If our bodies were full of that acid, we'd all dissolve.
If we did, in fact, evolve from monkeys, how come babies aren't born monkeys?
Do you think that if no one believed in any religion, there'd be no wars or fighting? I think it'd be worse. I think it'd be way worse. I know if I didn't have God's judgment and fear, I would have killed many, many times. It's not known whether God created oil 6,000 years ago when he created the earth, or whether the coal deposits were developed during Noah's flood 4,000 years ago. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. What matters is that if you don't believe God created the earth 6,000 years ago, you're going to hell. The thing is, people can't think for themselves, and they get so confused about reality.
Yo, so many illogical arguments get recycled in everyday conversations when vindicating the Bible. Defending a superstition with no facts is unreliable. No vital to your existence or any means to your survival. I tend to ignore these hypocrites and I know when I'm being lied to. If you don't bring knowledge to the table, I'll easily despise you. So I cordially invite you to an open discussion. But use your brain before you decide to start your gum bumping. Most people say nothing and most debates are trumping. The emotions get in the way when they're explaining something. They're always close to listen. Always itching to speak. You cut me off, so I know you ain't listening to me. Your ideas are faulty, your depictions are weak. Quick to pull out scriptures like robbers that creep with the heat. Outdated principles will easily suffer defeat. You're not deep, I suggest you think before you speak. Yeah, you better think before you speak. Cause you don't wanna run into a rational person like me. You don't want me to have me question everything you believe and change your whole perception how you view reality. I'm brutally honest, but most say I mean. You can't say that what you said, even with the time machine. Remain inferior while I remain mentally supreme. remember when you talk to me, to think before you speak, nigga. For the arrogant douchebag that can't last some minutes without shutting her mouth, here's a newsflash. Yelling and getting hysterical won't get your views past. It's rational ideas. If you don't like that, then that's too bad. It's too sad you feel that it need to be instigated. I conclude most people don't have the slightest clue. Or what's a decent conversation? Isn't that the point of the baiting? To be at least given a chance to make a solid point in your statement. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, it doesn't hurt to listen. It could detect vital flaws in your opponent's position, but you're not paying attention. You're still running your mouth and sharing opinions on things you know nothing about. Talking in circles, that's why I'm not hearing you out. Digging yourself inside a grave you would never get out. I know you're bitter, that's why you get angry and shout. So think twice the next time you open your mouth. Yeah, you better think before you speak, cause you don't wanna run into a rational person like me. You don't want me to have you question everything you believe and change your whole perception how you view reality. I'm brutally honest, but most say I mean you can't take back what you said even with the time machine. Remain inferior while I remain mentally supreme. And remember when you talk with me, to think before you speak, nigga.
Not saying there's definitely no God, but the arrogance of a religious person who just knows, not only knows that there's a God, but knows it's this God, it's the Christian God, it's the Trinity, and the Virgin Mary was born of a virgin. I mean, they've got it all written down pat, and they've got absolutely not a shred of evidence for any of it. That's arrogance.
All right, so you just heard Adequate. He's a part of our Grand Unified family. So again, like I said, big shout out. He actually, if you like the song you just heard, you can get it. This is one of the bonus tracks off of the physical copies of his album called And Listen, or the And Listen mixtape. You can copy his music on Bandcamp. I will post. He asked me to post that link, and I will post that link for him. It's adequate.bandcamp.com. And if you want to get any of his other music, so again, that link's in the chat room. Shout out to him. So, the next topic. We had, as you guys remember, over the past week or so, there have been a lot of conversations regarding the fast food workers and them asking for compensation. And I have an article from the Griot that I'm posting in the chat room right now that talks a little bit about that, or talks about it. Basically, it points out that in Labor Day, which was this past Monday, the nation is witnessing a new movement to improve the living standards of fast food workers who are fighting for a livable wage to feed their families. On August 29th, the day after the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, fast food workers around the U.S. staged a walkout, in hundreds of stores in 50 cities, their largest protest ever. This comes a month after a four-day wave of strikes in which workers in seven cities walked off the job, reflecting a trend in recent years of activity in the growing retail and service industry. With support from the Service Employees International Union, which is SEIU, these strikers are demanding $15 an hour, a raise from the current minimum wage of $7.25, and the right to form unions without threats from the employer. The Obama administration has proposed a minimum wage hike to $9 an hour. For the labor unions, this recent campaign provides the opportunity to raise the floor for the lowest of wages in the nation. These low-paying jobs are replacing the higher-skilled, higher-paying positions lost with the decline in the manufacturing and the gutting of the American labor market. Moreover, the fast food strikes provide an opportunity to debunk the myth that the typical fast food worker is a teenager pursuing his or her first after-school job or an elderly person seeking some supplemental income. In an economy where the bottom has fallen out for millions of working Americans with stagnating wages and fewer well-paying job opportunities, the fast food industry has witnessed a rapid growth in adult workers who are attempting to raise families working in these part-time jobs with poverty wages. According to a study released in July by the National Employment Law Project, the average wage for frontline fast food workers is $8.94 per hour, among the lowest in the U.S. economy. Frontline jobs, including non-managerial positions such as cashiers, cooks, and delivery staff, account for 89.1% of the fast food industry, while first-line supervisors with a median hourly wage of $13.06 hold 8.7% of the jobs. And franchise owners make up, on average, 1% of fast food job holders, with there being a franchise owner for every 99 employees. Now, you guys can continue to read the article, but there's a lot more information and statistics in there, and I might pull from that during the discussion. But I want to know, what are your thoughts on these on these strikes? Do you believe that $15 an hour is fair? Do you think it's too high? Do you think it's too low? I want to get your opinion. I have caller 404 back on the line. Caller 404-563. What was your name again, and what did you want to say?
This is Mario again. Can y'all hear me over the truck engine?
What, yes. You said this is who?
Mario.
Oh, yeah. Mario.
Yeah. All right. So, I did a lot of fast food in retail before I started driving trucks, man. $15 is wishful thinking at best. I mean, if you got above $9, you were doing good. You're not gonna get more than that, much more than that, for a low skilled job. You know, I mean, we get training pay at my current company was $15. That's pulling just driving the semi. A cashier is not gonna get $15 an hour. Unless I don't see how you could. I mean, because then you would have to raise the rates of. That had raised the prices of the food and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have a ripple effect across the board. The food, even the suppliers and everything like that.
Do you think that the franchise owners can
get less of a huge profit?
And sorry, but sometimes the audio kind of cuts out a little bit. I don't know what's going on.
In fact, if someone actually has their radio on in the background, could you please turn that off because it's giving us some feedback. So I'm hearing my own voice in the background of whoever is listening to it on their computer. So please turn that down.
It's not me.
Not me either.
Yeah, I'll smoke that one in a second. But go ahead. I mean, I believe someone's making a point.
Vita, you know what? Tammy in Arkansas says, of course they deserve more. They're nice. They're attentive. They're really super smart. They're quick. They go out of their way to make your order right. Of course they deserve more. Tammy in California goes, welcome to Taco Bell. Can I have a Taco Supreme?
No,
I don't think it. You know you get that a lot in L.A., where you don't get that anywhere else in the country that I've been. They can't even understand what you're saying. And I'm like, at some point, you're getting yourself out of a job, because if it's $15 an hour, they're going to get the bright, young, cool people like I've gotten in Atlanta, and not the people who can't speak English. You're going to lose your job.
That's an interesting point.
The way that I feel about it is that the way the current job market is set up, $15 is a lot for fast food labor simply because other laborers are not getting paid the same. And it's not that I feel that they don't work hard or that I'm looking down on it as unskilled labor. What I'm saying is I have come across a variety of manual workers or quote-unquote unskilled laborers who I feel deserve that $15 much, much more. Janitors at schools, for instance, deserve $15 an hour or more.
Janitors at school make $17 an hour. Mm-hmm. LA Unified School District.
Exactly. But if you're in L.A., this is L.A. school district, or if you are a janitorial staff at a college, especially a public college, you should be getting paid more than that. And that's why I feel specifically that fast food workers should not get that much. But if the minimum wage isn't enough to live on, it doesn't even matter how skilled they are or how good or bad their English is. A person who has a job, a honest legal job that cannot pay for even a squalorly, miserly existence in this country, that reflects badly on the country and on the economy and on the minimum wage.
Exactly.
Well,
I don't agree at all, actually.
I want to go back to
economics into it.
Okay, hold on really quickly, and I really want to get to your point, Curtis, and I'm going to get to that point. But I wanted to kind of go back to something Tammy was saying, because I wanted to make sure we clarify what you meant and what you said. So you were saying that if they raise the minimum wage, that will decrease the number of people who work there and don't speak English. I guess I had a little trouble understanding what your point was.
That is actually true.
Well, this
I just don't understand what her point was, that's all.
This is my point. My point is that those, the guys at Taco Bell who cannot speak English, or the guys at McDonald's, and you live in L.A., so you know what I'm talking about, they're going to be out of a job. You know why? Because college students who just got out of school, who have a degree in art and can't find a job, would love $15 an hour. So if they actually succeed, they're going to be out of jobs.
More so to it, there's solid economic base behind this.
Well, that's my next question. Why do we want
There's a reason why that is.
Out of a job. Oh, well, let me finish. I'm going to kind of get
this. This is why.
I really want to vet out what she said. Why would we, why are we saying we want people who don't speak English out of a job? I'm not sure.
No, what I'm saying is that they're hiring. This is what I'm. Let me be clear. People
in LA. That's what I'm
asking.
Be clear and clarify your point.
Right.
I think. And the reason why I'm doing this, Tammy,
here
is I just want to make sure that your point is clarified, and that way we can.
I totally get it.
Go ahead.
I live in Greenwood, Arkansas, and if you make $8 an hour in Greenwood, Arkansas, you can have an apartment and a car. A tank of gas will last you, you know, you have a studio apartment, but it's an apartment nonetheless. And a car might be not the best car, but it's a car and gas, a tank of gas will last you a week. So you get people who need jobs, maybe single moms who work at McDonald's, Taco Bell, and at Sonic, just to get her money in. And she's polite and happy and helpful. But in L.A., $8 an hour, you're not going to get someone who even can live alone. You're going to get someone who has to live with a group of people. A lot more illegal aliens take those jobs, because that job in L.A. with gas, it's like paying to go to work. So what would happen if you then offered a living wage in California, $15 an hour? You can have a roommate and live in a one-bedroom apartment. Then you're going to have a different type of person who's out to get that job. Now, who are you going to give the job to? The person that is going to be the best person qualified, or the person that will just take the job because no one else in L.A. can afford to live off of that wage?
Exactly. She makes a good point. I mean, if you're going to be paying $15
an hour,
you're going to want someone young and hip and trendy or whatever.
Do you think that if they start paying
more to it than
$15 an hour, that won't cause low skilled work to all other low skilled jobs to start also paying about that much, which may also increase the income of those who are skilled laborers?
No, that's not what's going to happen at all.
Okay, and explain
economics.
I don't know. I'm not an economist.
With economics, and there's a sound economic base for why we haven't done it. There's a certain equilibrium point, because this is human capital here. This is people who haven't taken economics or don't understand economics, don't like it said this way. But when someone hires an employee, they're essentially buying a unit of capital that's going to give them a return, right? Just like any other good with supply and demand, there's a certain point to where the price of something is so high, demand will drop. Just like if I have Big Macs, and say, for instance, the Big Mac was $2. For any arbitrary reason, I decide to raise to $10. There's going to be a corresponding drop in demand for Big Macs, because people will either, A, buy less of them and turn it into a luxury item, or they will try to find a cheaper alternative. With labor, people have to understand how wages are set in the first place. How do you know to pay a surgeon $300,000 a year? How do we know to pay engineer 70 and so on and so on and so forth? The minimum wage should be higher because of inflation. It's below inflation. But once you set it up to $15 an hour, what you're going to do is now you're going to make that particular job more competitive now, right? So it's going to demand a higher skill base, because employers can be more discerning about who they hire, because they're paying someone twice what they were paying before. Their payroll just doubled. So what they're going to do, like anything else, like the price of that Big Mac, is, A, they're going to be the competition for the job is going to increase, right? I'm not going to tolerate someone who don't speak English well, because I don't have to. I'm hiring less people, and there's college students who need jobs, so I can keep them out of work. So, and keep in mind, too, you have a lot of people who ask for this $15 an hour, who's displacing students, because the workforce technically starts at 16, and the unemployment rate for 16-year-olds on up to 21 is 40%. So if we do this, we're going to increase that number with the lower skilled tier of the people who had the job before, and you're permanently keeping teenagers out of a job. Because why would you hire a 16-year-old in high school for the same job that you could hire an art student? You wouldn't do that.
Do you think that $15 an hour was just there?
Please,
do you think
please.
That? But this is my question. This is my next question. Do you think that $15 an hour was just a high asking number? Just because, you know, chances are they're not going to get $15 an hour.
It's too high. If you made $15 an hour here in Greenwood, Arkansas, you would be one of the higher paid people in Greenwood, Arkansas. It would be ridiculous.
11 is where it should be at. I think 11 is a good number, adjusting for inflation for when the minimum wage. And keep in mind, here's another statistic. America has the third highest minimum wage when adjusting for purchasing power parity in the world. So let's keep that in mind. It's not necessarily about the wage you get. It's about what you can buy with the money that you earn. And that's one of the things that people don't take into account. Right now, the minimum wage is too low. But if you pay somebody a living wage, you're disincentivizing the conveyor belt of labor, right? The whole idea is that people move on and they get progressed, and that's how you get socioeconomic mobility. True, we want to improve people's lives where they are, but you don't want to disincentivize someone. You do not want to encourage a 45-year-old person as a fry cook at McDonald's raising a family of three. You don't want to incentivize that.
Can I please?
Go ahead.
Because we've had this conversation. I believe I've had this conversation with Curtis on your page, Vita. And first let me say that I never thought in my lifetime we would be having a conversation about whether or not we should pay people a living wage. That to me is insane. We're throwing out a lot of hypothetical numbers.
$15 an hour is actually above a living wage.
Let me get this out here
because we're throwing around a lot of numbers. The reality is, number one, in 10 years, the price of gas has tripled in over 10 years. The price of food has doubled. Corporate salaries
have increased
700% over the past 20 years. 700%. No one talks about how the increasing corporate salaries are going to affect capital and overall production and supply and demand. They can raise it at the top end when you should be raising it at the bottom end. If the minimum wage is what it should be now, it will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $16-17 an hour. People cannot. We want to deal with, talk about these jobs are for kids or for old people. The reality of it is unemployment is at 7.4%. Unemployment in the black community is nearly 30%. 25% of black people who have been out of work have been out of work for 99 weeks or longer, regardless of who should be having
companies
those jobs.
Companies aren't charity.
The reality of it is the people who have those jobs are the people who need them, people with families, people with children.
The reality is they are there.
Instead of telling people you can have $15 an hour,
you need more money. Too many people talking all at the same time. I got to mute all y'all. Calm down. I believe M was trying to make a point, and then we'll go back. Well, I think it was Curtis who wanted to push back a little bit. Hey, M, go ahead.
I'm unmuted?
You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, awesome. I did hear, you know, Curtis talking about the economy, and points were valid, and he did say how these corporations are not a charity. I want to tackle that point first, because that point right there is completely disingenuous and irrelevant, because no one is talking about corporations giving away money for free. We're talking about labor. We're talking about.
But that's not what I was saying either, though.
But
I can clarify it, though.
As I was saying, I feel that $15 is definitely not too much to ask for fast food labor. However, I also feel that other manual laborers and factory laborers should be getting paid more than that if our fast food employees are getting paid $15 an hour. And
why?
Like Dawson mentioned, because the price of food and the price of gas and the cost of living in general has gone up, the minimum wage should go up. And that's why we have a minimum wage. And this is why we had things like COLAs in the 80s and 90s. There's still jobs that have those things, cost of living adjustments. Your pay is adjusted based on how much it costs to live. And, yeah, it's going to suck when you're getting
inflation
less.
Is 1.6%.
Wait, one moment. Can I please finish speaking? It's going to suck if your paycheck is less, if it doesn't cost as much to live, but you're going to be thankful for that cost of living adjustment when it costs more to live and you have more money in your paycheck to take care of your family. Because when you're talking about 16-year-olds in fast food labor, that's simply not the case. Most fast food laborers on average 29 years old, and they have children, and they have families. These are not teenagers taking these jobs. Teenagers and students alike like the posh jobs. They like working at Starbucks, even if Starbucks is also minimum wage. They don't want to smell like French fries after work. They want to smell like coffee.
Well,
and
let me ask you this question.
You know,
well, let me throw this question in there. Let me throw this question in there real quick. Is that really a long-term solution, based on what you just said, Em, is a long-term solution to let's go ahead and compensate the workers, the workforce that's there now, or the long-term solution, let's fix employment so that way these 29-year-olds don't have to work in fast food, and we can go ahead and give these jobs back to youth, back to college students. I just want to know. I mean, is that a long-term solution? Let's increase the way. And I'm not making a claim either way. I'm really sincerely asking this and throwing this out there. Is the long-term solution to increase the wage? I mean, I'm not saying that a living wage isn't good, because I really believe all workers working a full-time job should definitely get a living wage. That's my personal opinion. Yeah. However, question a long-term solution if we're talking about jobs that were once held by young people and were at, you know, college students, high school students or whatever, and now a lot of them don't have jobs. Let's keep in mind that too. It's not that they want to work at Starbucks. They're not getting jobs. I know plenty of teenagers who definitely would love to and need to work, and a lot of them are out of jobs, especially black youth are out of jobs, which opinion people say contributes to crime in many areas. So is a long-term solution to compensate workers at this stage, or is a long-term solution to try to get more jobs and fix the economy so that way 29-year-olds or 25-year-olds or somebody fresh out of college can actually have a job? That's the question.
I think it's both myself. You know, personally, as a person who I did food delivery, I do food delivery, and I see the itemized receipt that these restaurants have to take in for everything that I'm bringing to their restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
If you raise one of the last things that they care about is the employee, because you raise the cost of having to pay the employee. Now you're cutting away from the profits and the bottom line and stuff like that. You still have to pay me for bringing this. Yeah, the company needs to pay the diesel company for bringing diesel, maintenance and everything like that. It's not just paying the employee. It's what else is going to come from all that as well. What are you taking from? What can you reduce? And what can you? Nobody. This company here is not going to reduce their prices so you can compensate your employee more. So
let me apologize. Can I say something? I want to apologize, first of all, for raising my voice. But it is something. This is something I'm very passionate about. And it's something that I've talked about at length. It's one of the reasons why we saw in 2012 conservatives and other people rally against unions and seek to break up unions, and all these right-to-work states come open. If I can really just spin a story really quick. This is an actual story about an actual individual, a man named Gary Wilkins. He drove a truck for 20 years for the Greensboro News and Record. And here in Greensboro, North Carolina, he was a truck boy. He went from a truck driver to managing the dock. It was a skilled job. The man made well over $60,000 a year. Well, one day the News and Record decided his job didn't exist anymore, so he didn't have a job anymore. Now that man was 55 and unemployed. Now, he couldn't go out and compete with the young drivers because he was too old, but he still had a house and a car and a kid in college. So he ended up having to go and pick up a couple of fast food jobs in order to make ends meet. Well, he didn't make ends meet, and he ended up having his home foreclosed upon. This is the reality that we live in America. We can say what we want. We can come up with all the statistics that we want. But the reality of it is the one statistic that we should be paying attention to is that 1 in 3 Americans live at or below the poverty level, and that is because the American worker is paid too little. And that's across the board. I don't care what you're doing. If you're doing it in America, you're not making enough money for it. Meanwhile, corporate wages have skyrocketed 700%. They'll give $30 million a year to one person, but can't give $15 an hour to a handful of people because of cost? That's nonsense.
You know what? I have to agree with you because I'm very conservative about certain things. The reason why they can't is because they don't want to dip into their profits.
Exactly. And that's my whole point is and if I cut anybody off, I'm sorry because the audio goes in comms and whatnot, so I apologize for that. But exactly, you know, they're not gonna cut that. You know, when you
y'all are oversimplifying a complicated thing.
No, we're not, man, because the simply bringing the goods to the restaurant can cost, the bill alone, I delivered $12,000 to a taxi. You know, that's including having to pay.
Sorry, guys,
here's the
why I said that. We're out of time. Sorry, everybody. I know I tried to try to get all you guys in, but we're out of time. And thank you. I feel awful just cutting off the discussion, and I don't really have time tonight to go into overtime, but I do want to thank everyone. Is everyone okay on the line? Nobody
yeah,
pissed
yeah.
at me.
Oh,
I had
yeah.
to cut it off.
Yeah,
we're going
yeah,
to
I mean,
part two to this. Yeah, we definitely do a part two to this. But I do want to thank everyone who has called in. I appreciate every single one of you, but a special thanks to Emmalyn and Doc for being on the panel and helping me out with the show. Special thanks to Kim for this opportunity, Black Free Thinkers. I also want to give a special thanks to Grand Unified Theory Collective and Black Skeptics LA, my organization. And for those of you guys who are not too familiar with Black Free Thinkers, I'm going to go ahead and let Em plug her next show real quick. You want to give us a quick plug for
the
show?
Next slide. Friday, Mario and I will be on air at our new time, Friday, 6 p.m. That's 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that is next Friday, and we will be discussing Lesser Known Religions Part 2. We had a Part 1 to this show about three, four weeks ago, and it went very, very well, but apparently there were many more, not very well-known religions, much more than we could fit in the two-hour time span, so we're doing part two of that next Friday. And in 3 weeks, we will be doing an interview with a lucky atheist who is active in the community. So please tune in Friday. That's Friday of next week, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. West Coast people, just get out of work early, tell your boss you're sick, do whatever you need to do.
Or listen to it at work. Thank you so much, Em. I want to thank everyone who called in onto the show. I got Tammy, Mario, Curtis, Brown Beasley, Frederick. I forget everybody who called. B, Akia,
Frederick.
Thank you all. Yeah, he called in earlier.
I missed him.
You missed Frederick. Yes, Frederick Sparks. He's my heart. Love him. So thank you, everyone. Thank you to everyone in the chat room. I appreciate every single one in the chat room. I love the discussion that was taking place, and I appreciate you guys for doing that. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, Vida Star, VIDASTARR. I can be controversial. I can just talk a lot of shit. Just go ahead and follow me. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/VidaStar. I appreciate you all. Love you. I want to play one more song from my Grand Unified camp. This is from GA. It's called Johnny 5. So, again, thank you and good night.
Good night.
Hello, all. My name is GA. I'm a junkie. Self-control I lack. I'm hooked. sack, and no one applauds. Please, y'all, hold that. I ain't here to get clean. Sobriety's whack. Actually, I need to know who here got a pack. Mail it to me in a tough package with a rising sack. No, shaking my game. Nah, screw that. I'm actually quite proud that I freebase facts. I need more. 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 Information. I'm a junkie, whore. I need more. More. I need more. Calculus classes, I'm starting to twitch. These differential equations are making me itch. Without it, my mind hurts. I'm mad. Kick cups, world class jerk. Outside Dr. Tyson's office. I learned more.
Please.
More. 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 Information. I'm a junkie, whore. I need more. More. I need more info on how that laser at NIF works. It's been too long without a hit. My attitude's terse. I need a shot that makes these particles that travel in reverse. Yeah, that hits the spot. The thing is the worst. I need more. 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 Information. I'm a junkie. Whore. I need more. More. I need more info to continue to stack words. Are there alternate universes with time travel backwards?
Really?
It's one of the things I try to decipher, incipher, incipher, ride inside your mind. What I'm for more, 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 more information. I'm a junkie, oh, I need more, more. I need more mass, time, speed of light to the second power. Without that, humanity needs a final hour. I need more of this nectar making my blood sing. The constituent to everything, just maybe a string. More, 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 more. Information, I'm a junkie, whore, I need more. More, I need more reasons to refrain from punching politicians. I need more tactics to try to get these people to listen. I need more data on how the sun works when trying to beat iron, watch the vibes and starburst. I need more, 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 more information. I'm a junkie, whore. I need more. I need more empirical evidence of your claims. Religion and science are not the same. Inhaling data, let it dance in my brain. I'm mesmerized by knowledge like a moth to a flame. I need more. 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 Information. I'm a junkie, whore. I need more. I need more information on the hit field. Is this the EA League group affecting all quantum fields? Discovered the bosons, does that line make sense still? I'm spitting, trying to increase my physical skills. I need more. 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 Information. I'm a junkie, whore. I need more. I need more information, I gotta stay on course. More research funding, let's study the strong force. I need more people without knowledge fear. Yo, I wanna build a Dyson sphere. I need more. 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 Information, I'm a junkie, whore. I need more.
Somebody help me.
I need more information on Powell's principle. Is it true energy bursts affecting my whole crew? The charge never settle. Electrons up at energy level. Simply for me, setting fire to metal. I need more. 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 Information. I'm a junkie. Whore. I need more. I need more logical, rational discourse. More atheists, that's reasonable. Of course, no more doubling down on your viewpoints, boy. So we'll continue down this path of catching a loss. I need more from you. More. 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 Information. I'm a junkie, whore. I need more.
I gotta do something.